Talking Points, the loverugbyleague.com podcast with Dave Parkinson and James Gordon. Episode 4. Hello and welcome to episode 4 of Talking Points, the loverugbyleague.com podcast. Today we'll be discussing the big overseas players debate. Is the too many over here playing their trade in Super League and the Championship? We'll also continue our build-up to the new season, looking back at 2010 at Leeds, Salford and St Helens, while also chatting about the signings that all three clubs have made ahead of the 2011 season. We'll also be joined by a special guest, Lee Coach Ian Millward. As usual, I'm joined by James Gordon, so sit back and listen to Talking Points. First of all, James, hello, how are you doing? All right?
Yeah, not so bad yourself, Dave?
Yeah, not so bad at all, not so bad. We've got a big issue to discuss today, haven't we?
Yeah, certainly, yeah.
The big overseas player debate, and do you think, first of all, there's too many players over here from overseas playing the trade in Super League?
I suppose it's the easy answer, and I imagine you've got the research to back it up, so I'm going to say yes.
Certainly, I've had a look, and this is courtesy of RL Fans Yearbook and whatever other bits of things I've been able to pull together over the last couple of days. But yeah, out of what, 350 potential players in Super League last season, 92 of them were from overseas, and it's a similar sort of story for this campaign. Now, I thought that I'd go through actually and look at each Super League club's player list that they have from overseas and actually think whether they provide anything to the competition. This could get a bit lengthy, so bear with us.
Yeah, I'd worry in case there's any big Australians hunting you down after this, Dave, as well.
I'm not going to say anything too controversial, I hope, you know, but we'll have a see. They can all reach me on Twitter anyway, there's no problem. Anyway, over at Bradford, they've signed Patrick Arvan, Brett Kearney, Mark Herbert, Heath Lestrange and Shad Royston ahead of the 2011 season. They're all the overseas player contingent. Now, obviously, they've let Hall go very recently. Do you think any of those add to their squad?
Yeah, I think Brett Kearney and Heath Lestrange were very good last season in patches, and I think they'll continue to do that this season. I suppose it's hard to analyse them sort of standalone. You've got to look at maybe the players that they're replacing, and when you look at maybe Lestrange is in and they've got rid of Wayne Godwin now, and do you put that side by side and say, well, is Lestrange preventing Wayne Godwin from making progress? But then on the other hand, you can say, well, they've signed Matt Diskin to cover that gap anyway. But then you'd look at Leeds and then you look at, well, why is Diskin leaving Leeds? And that's because they've got Danny Badiris. So it's almost like a big circle in that regard. Shad Royston's been over here for years and years anyway, so I mean, you could probably give them that one. Mark Herbert is an unknown, pretty much, Australian.
Sadly, he's a halfback as well, isn't he?
Yeah, and you think, is there not a scrum half playing for the Bulls Academy?
They've got Kane Southernwood, though.
Yeah, he came from Wakefield, didn't he?
And he did.
Exactly, and it's like, well, what has Herbert got that someone like Southernwood hasn't got? Because the primary reason, surely, that youngsters don't get a game is due to lack of experience. Yet Herbert comes in, but because he's from Australia, he all of a sudden is good. And you get exceptions. I mean, Herbert might prove us wrong and he might have a very good season. You get exceptions like Michael Dobson, who certainly wasn't heard of when he came over here and played for Catalans, and he did very well. But I suppose that's the argument, I guess, that goes against overseas players, is that are English players, and I'm not even asking the question, it is a fact that English players are not getting through because there's Australian players in the way, and whether that's something to do with the English players not having the ability or whether it's just one of those things, who knows?
Let's face it, I mean, there's players all over the Championship, isn't there, who you think could really have been given a chance in Super League. I'm sort of thinking, well, Widnes have just signed one for the forthcoming season in Chaz Iansen, played something like 30, 33, 35 Super League games for Hull Kingston Rovers. Suddenly he's cast aside and Blake Green's coming.
There's probably plenty of players. Well, you only have to look at, say, Jamie Rooney at Barrow. There's plenty of players with the ability that are playing in the Championships that haven't been able to get there or not been able to give the chance in Super League. And when you look at the vast amount of overseas players there are, if you could take out a chunk of them, and if you took up, say, 20 of them players, there's certainly 20 players in the Championship who would be more than capable of stepping up.
And looking through some of these lists, Castleford, they've got Ranky Chase, Ryan McGoldrick, Again, two key positions, really, fullback and halfback. And they've got players who are preventing homegrown lads coming through.
Yeah.
Or are they?
I think with players like Chase McGoldrick, they're very good players for that cast of a team. I wouldn't necessarily say that we're never going to get to a stage where the 100% of the team is English. And Casford have got Chase and McGoldrick. Yeah, they're playing in key positions, but that's because they're good players. I don't think necessarily that they're perhaps blocking players in, but those leads to questions, as we were saying previously, about English players playing in key positions. If teams like Casper are sourcing quality players from overseas to play in those positions, where are the England national team going to get these players? And I suppose that is the problem. It's balancing out how it works. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a quality overseas player, don't get me wrong. It's just managing it to ensure that we're at least developing some English players as well.
LoveRugbyLeague.com for all your rugby league needs. I did a bit of research last year when Steve McNamara was naming his England squad head of the Four Nations. And what it actually showed was that out of, I think, 54 possible selections or possible players that could be selected to play for the England setup in your fullback, standoff, scrum half and hooker, there was only 24 English players which could actually be picked from. So it was really affecting the national team's performance, that, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, you can't blame teams like Casford for signing the likes of Chase and McGoldrick because they're good players. And at the end of the day, Casford needs to do what they need to do to compete. But the problem is that if Casper are doing it and then Hawkeye are doing it and then whoever else is doing it, then that obviously is then preventing English players from coming through. And at the end of the day, that's what's going to be providing England national team. I mean, you only have to look at the sort of players that are going over from English players to the NRL are generally forward. They're never picking off fullbacks and scrum halves to go and play over in Australia.
Is this because they're not getting the chance and they're not really getting to that sort of level where the Australian clubs are interested in them?
Well, perhaps that's what it is, and perhaps it's also a thing where the Australian teams think, well, we need a bit of chemistry with our four key men. They're players that have maybe come through their youth setups, or they're thinking, well, hang on, if we're bringing English players through in those key positions, then what about our players?
And to be fair, the pack positions, we never really struggle with producing good pack men. You've only got to look around Super League. There's a lot of good forwards knocking about, isn't there?
Yeah, well, that's it. And you only have to look at the strength of England's pack that perhaps signifies that. I think the thing with forwards is that because of the interchange system's benefited that greatly, there's more opportunities for people to have a chance. Whereas if you look in fullback, generally speaking, the fullback and the halfback stay the same for an entire game, week in, week out. Whereas at least with the props, you've got two on, two off. The second row is sometimes two off. The hookers interchange, and I mean, you could say that the hooker interchange introduction has perhaps hindered development a little bit, but it at least means that if there is an overseas hooker in a team, then at least they can back him up with a young English player. Maybe that isn't a necessarily bad thing.
And looking over at Hull, for example, they've. All their overseas players, they're all Pac-Men. They've got Craig Fitzgibbon there. They've got Apolahami Luaki. They've got Willie Manu, Sam Moore. And yes, I did say Sam Moore, not Samoa. And Marco Mealy.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably one of the teams that have kept away from... Only recently, in previous years, they've had the likes of Motitoni, of course. And they're looking at their triangle, I suppose. You've got Tansy, and then you've got Horn and Long at half back, and then is it Danny Horton who's the young hooker there?
That's right.
And so they're looking at maybe this is where we could pull something out of the bag, if you like.
Now, in a previous edition, we actually did praise, or I remember you praising Hull Kingston Rovers as being the team to hold up, and if you're coming up from the Championship, that's what you want. But to be fair, they've got 10 overseas players in their squad. Is this what it's all about, really?
Well, I mean, yeah, you'd hope that they'd be trying to bring through more young players. I suppose clubs are stuck between a rock and a hard place sometimes because they need to compete, especially after getting promotion. And you look at the list and the likes of Galea and Vela and Newton have been big players for them since they came up. You've got Ben Fisher on that list that played for them in the national leagues anyway. I think the whole point, as we've alluded to before, the whole point of the licensing system is to try and encourage teams to bring through their own players. Maybe Hooker haven't quite bought into that, as you mentioned about Ianson being released to be replaced by Blake Green, and maybe that's one area that Hull KR will be looking to improve, because they've certainly done everything else right in terms of progressing the transition from National League to Super League, ensuring that they're not just existing, they're actually pushing on, and improving their fan base, improving their crowd, because that's the difference between, because you look at there's certain clubs that are just existing in Super League, they're just relying on the Super League handouts, they're not growing, they're not improving, they're not going anywhere.
Am I thinking Wakefield here with your
that's perhaps right, and what forward thinking is happening at Wakefield, and that's, Super League needs to be about teams that want to grow and who want to make the game bigger, and at the moment at least Hull KR are giving that a stab, trying to better themselves, and that's something which maybe Wakefield are not doing, and maybe that's what will cost Wakefield their Super League future.
Now Wakefield for next season, they've got Kevin Henderson, Daryl Millard, Ben Jeffries, Sam Obst, Michael Corkidis, Glenn Morrison, Motu Tony and Jeremy Smith as their overseas players. That's a big chunk of their squad as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Wakefield have generally always had a few sort of, they tend to have like Pacific Islanders and stuff as well, and but the thing with Wakefield is, one thing that you can't deny them is the fact that they have given young English players a chance.
They have Gareth Ellis down the years, yeah, Ben Westwood.
Yeah, and you're looking at Ryan Atkins was given a chance there after he wasn't given a chance at Bradford, and you only have to look at the players that Wakefield have got from the National Leagues as well, like Matt Blaymeyer and Peter Fox, you know, players like that Wakefield have actually given a chance to. And maybe that's down to the fact that, who knows whether that's because they can't attract players or they can't afford players of a higher calibre, but even if they can't, they've still given a chance to these young players. Wakefield have been in Super League a very long time, and that's no accident, because they've been able to get by. But I think now we've moved on to the licensing, it's just not suited Wakefield quite so much as it has other teams. Kevin Henderson plays for Scotland, doesn't he? Corkidis has been around over here for a while, as has Ben Jeffries. Yeah, they'd probably like to maybe have that bit, have a few less Australian players, but it's very difficult for Wakefield at the moment, because there's so much uncertainty over their future, and that's the problem with the licensing, because it's almost as if
it's meant to secure clubs' futures, though, isn't it?
Yeah, and. Well, that's it. The licence is running 2009 to 2011. But the thing is, we're at the back end of the 2010 season, you're already worrying about what Wakefield are going to do, and it's essentially going to overshadow the whole 2011 season, because every week we're going to have all this rubbish about what Wakefield doing, why are Wakefield not doing this, why are Wakefield doing that, when we should be looking at.
It should be about what they do on the field, shouldn't it?
We should be looking at Wakefield. Okay, they're on a budget this season, and that's clear from the signings they've made. But hang on, they're winning these games, they're winning that games, and that's perhaps where it's all wrong, and it's not fair on Wakefield fans. I suppose it's not fair on any fans that are getting broiled into it. I'm sure Widnes and Lee fans are probably say, well, we've been treated unfairly or whatever over the past few years, so why should it be any different to Wakefield? But that's not the point. And looking at Wakefield, I think will do very well to stay off the stay out of the bottom, maybe two or three next season, because the problem, the overhanging of the future is affecting the players that they can recruit, and it's just not fair.
I want to just drag it back onto what we're talking about, though, the big overseas player debate, obviously. And probably our next episode we'll be discussing a lot more about what's happening at Wakefield and the whole situation involving that club, and I really do want to go and give that the time it deserves. But looking again at the big overseas player debate, it surely goes against the grain when you've got an established international like Willie Mason, turned out something like 10 or 12 times for Australia. He can suddenly go ahead over to Tonga, have a matey beer with the Tongan PM, and suddenly, next thing you know, he's got a Tongan passport and he doesn't count on the overseas quota. That is probably some of the loopholes that should be looking at being closed down, and that club shouldn't be allowed to exploit.
Yeah, that's part of the problem, isn't it? It's like the RFL will perhaps restrict it to, I think, is it restricted to five or something like that?
I think it is, yeah. It's five like that. Non-federation trained players,
yeah,
I think,
but
is
then,
the, what
but
the gen
then
says.
All of a sudden there's daft ways around it. He once went on holiday to France so he can get a passport or something, you know, like really daft things like that. And yeah, it's not as bad as it used to be, but the fact that you've been able to generate such a vast list is an indication that yeah, it's it's a big problem, but it's just the legalities of getting around it.
LoveRugbyLeague.com for all your rugby league needs. Even the top clubs, looking down the list, your likes of your Leeds, who we're going to talk about a little bit more in the show, they've got Brent Webb, Brett Delaney, Kylie Lulai, Danny Badiris, Ali Lewatiti, Wella Haraki and Ben Cross this season. So again, it's another big contingent, isn't it, of overseas players.
And when you look at the players that Leeds bring through themselves, you're just thinking, why do they need all of these overseas players when they're bringing through players that are more than capable of their own? And I mean, Wigan are getting a lot better at it, but a few years ago, a few seasons back, you're looking at all the players that Wigan outcasted just so they could put in an expensive Australian import. It's almost as if they've gone back to that this season with the three signings they've made from Melbourne, but I don't know, it's a tricky one. It's almost as if there's this sort of stigma attached to overseas players in that they will be better. They will automatically be better than English players, and I don't necessarily think that's true. And it's almost as if clubs think they have to go overseas, and it's only like when I've seen discussions from Championship fans, you know, because the Championship clubs get one quota place, I think, and when they don't fill that quota place, it's like, oh, why can't we get a big Samoan or a big Tongan to come in to fill that space in the centres? But then you're thinking, well, hang on, what about young English players that are knocking about in the Championships who can play in the centres? And there just seems to be this mentality that overseas players will automatically be better than English, and that's not the case.
Down the years, it's proved not to be the case, hasn't it? In some respects, I'm thinking over at Leeds, they had Brett Mullins, who came over under a blaze of glory, if you like, and left with nothing but a whimper. They also brought Bradley Clyde over, who sadly, after such a stellar career in Australia, did virtually nothing for them. So that's just to highlight just a couple of players down the years over at Leeds, one of the big glory clubs, if you like, where it's not quite worked, and it doesn't always work. I know certainly there was Happy Frank Kendicott's Colpack crew, wasn't there, really, at Widnes in the mid-2000s?
Yeah, and that's what got Widnes relegated, and I think that the whole Colpack ruling was one of the big things with the quota thing, wasn't it?
It's still there, obviously, because
and there's no control really that the RFL have over that, and it's just it's just a little bit frustrating, and it's like the fans as well. I mean, the fans probably wouldn't mind an all English team getting relegated as long as they put all the effort, you know, like they tried week in week out. But when you're bringing in expensive imports and you're paying to fly them over, you're paying their wages to play, you expect better things of them, and that's where the sort of frustration is, and you probably ask every fan, and every fan would probably prefer to see a young homegrown lad, you know, playing for their team and winning matches for them rather than having some sort of big Aussie import. Yeah, it's great to have big name Australian players or overseas players coming in, but for every big name like a Willie Mason, there's
nobody.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. That's where the line is.
See, I am going to be getting these Australians coming beating down my door, aren't I? But having said that, we do like to hear other people's opinions. It's not just all about myself and James giving you our opinions on the game, although we do like doing that, though, no doubt about it. I was also looking at some of the interesting messages which have arrived via this whole debate via Twitter. And certainly Richard Kelly, he says that rules need to be forged, that academy and reserve players must make squads every week. There's too many mediocre Australians over here.
Yeah, I think it's definitely moving in the right direction with the restrictions, if you like, that are being put into place. I think, do they need eight homegrown players in your squad of 25 or something like that? But even then, it's like you don't need to play any of them and you've still got 17. And then as we've just discussed, there's always a loophole somewhere. There's always a way to get around it. And you can't blame the clubs for exploiting that. At the end of the day, they're just doing what they can to stretch themselves, but have they got a responsibility to the game as a whole to limit them? While it might not be feasible legally to say to a club you can't have more than X number of players, should the clubs have a responsibility to limit themselves? And
Should have like a gentleman's agreement, do you mean?
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, that's
we're not going to sign any more than three.
Yeah, it's not like a legal thing that can be enforced, but there could be sort of like a gentleman's agreement, as you say, that doesn't let. The problem is that when you get one club breaking that agreement, then everybody else does it, and everyone might agree five, and then someone comes along and gets a six, and then somebody else comes along and gets six, and then somebody else has a seventh, and then that's how it escalates.
I'll tell you what I'd like to see, and I know that Super League clubs, they name 19-man squads, don't they, ahead of the game. I would actually like to see 19-man squads on match days with the proviso that you have three or four academy lads on the bench or three or four homegrown youngsters which you're ready to give a chance to. Yeah, I suppose clubs will have to come up with an extra couple of pay packets to go round, won't they? But I think that ultimately, that'd be a very good thing to be able to bring players on, particularly if it's your own grown players.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how you could work that in with the interchanges and stuff like that. But I mean, there's certainly games where clubs might think, well, we could have given an academy lad a run out if we'd have had him on the bench, you know, give him that experience. And them games are few and far between, I suppose. And maybe if the resource was there to get him involved, that they would.
Now, Mark Taylor, he's also commented that there's too many overseas players and the likes of Willie Mason turning up with a Tongan passport makes a mockery of any form of development.
Yeah,
strong words, really.
Well, I think you'd love to have Willie Mason. Willie Mason is a fantastic signing for Super League, don't get me wrong. And you definitely, if everyone had a quota of three, he'd be one of your three that you'd have. If you could pick, I mean, if you had one, you'd pick him. Certainly out of... Yeah, the issue I think Mark has got is the fact that he's waltzing over on top of another however many overseas players courtesy of this Tongan passport. It wouldn't be so bad if Mason was coming over on his Australian passport, but the fact is that he's coming over on a Tongan passport and adding to what is already a substantial overseas collection of players.
Now, Kevin Mart, he said that there shouldn't be any overseas players. He wants to get rid of the lot. He said, yes, I know it's extreme, but until we get rid of overseas players, our decline will continue.
I'm not too sure about that, because the overseas players do assist the development. They do add to the quality of the game. They do add excitement. And you're always going to even get loopholes with that. Even if you did ban overseas players, you'd get people coming over, getting UK passports even, you know, if you've got an Irish grandparent or something along those lines. And I don't think it'd be unfair to say that overseas players don't add anything to our game. They do, and they bring new ideas with them. They bring new skill sets. They bring different knowledge that maybe players over here haven't got. And you only have to see at the impact that Australian coaches like Michael Maguire and Nathan Brown have had, that ideas from overseas are good for our game. It's
how you implement them, really.
Yeah,
isn't it?
And there's a limit to everything. And at the moment, I think we're just overdoing that limit.
Now, Rachel Barrett, she's a Leeds Rhinos fan. And she said that she's totally on the fence, really. On one hand, over at Leeds, over the years, they've had the Iros, they've had Innes, they've had Webb, Donald, Ferner. But on the other hand, they've also had expensive mistakes, like the two players that I mentioned before. She's brought up Mullins and Brad Clyde again.
Yeah, I think, Ben Walker's another one that sticks in my mind. Who was at
Leeds. Yeah, didn't really do a lot, did he?
With big raps And that's the thing. I mean, that happens with any signings in any sport, though. You always get hit and miss signings, and that's the thing. But I think my underlying thought is that overseas players are good for the game, but there needs to be a limit to them so it's not detrimental to the development of our own players.
I guess this is a topic which could rumble on and on and on, and certainly we've had a big say on it. If you have any more, just Twitter us or tweet us or email us at loverugbyleague.com. Come and talk Rugby League in our forums, loverugbyleague.com. Okay, our next topic that we're going to talk about, we're going to look at three more clubs in Super League in our build-up to the 2011 campaign. I'm going to start off, first of all, with Leeds, who, surprisingly, they didn't threaten the big boys largely last season, did they?
No, it was a bit of a strange one, wasn't it? They had the World Cup. It was the World Cup Challenge, wasn't it? That there was sort of a bit of a hangover.
Mm. Threw them out, really, didn't it? Because they never started the season on very good form.
Yeah,
and then they never really gained good form, probably up until the closing 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think that's the problem with the World Cup Challenge. It's very awkward, isn't it? Because you sort of... everyone's gearing up to that game, but you're playing a couple of league games behind it, before it even, and then you've got the league games after it, that you've still got a bit of a hangover from it, and it is a bit awkward, but they went to Wigan sort of in the playoffs, didn't they, and snatched that win there. And
it was perhaps one of the games of 2010, that, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was certainly my game of 2010, and it was a pleasure to be there, and that was just an indicator, that was just like a timely reminder to remind teams that, hang on, we are still about, but I think 2011 will be a tricky one for them. At the end of the day, Leeds have been the benchmark, the team to beat over the past few years.
They won the competition 3 years in a trot.
Exactly, yeah. So everyone, they've been on a pedestal waiting for everyone to beat, and that's the problem when you're a winner. People want to beat you, people want to challenge you, and now that's what we're seeing the likes of Wigan and Warrington doing. And Leeds have got to be careful that they're not going to go the same way Bradford have gone. Bradford seem to, well, we'll see how they go, but Bradford, by looking at their recruitment, are trying to reverse their decline. But Leeds will want to make sure that they don't fall into that trap.
You don't want to get stuck in a rut, do you? And I think that certainly with some of the players that have moved on from Leeds over the close season, they're not doing that. They're trying to renew things, aren't they? I'm just looking down the list. Greg Eastwood, he's gone to the Bulldogs. Scott Donald has retired. Dane Manning, a young player, has gone to Batley. The surprising one, which we touched on in a previous show, Matt Diskin, going to Bradford. Zach Hardacre, he's come in and gone straight back out to Featherstone on a dual contract. Tom Bush has gone to York, and Luke Ambler has gone to the Quins on loan.
The thing with Leeds is that they've always got really good youngsters coming through anyway, so although they may have lost them players, there's probably players that me and you probably know very little about or perhaps don't know anything about that may well come through next season. Ben Jones-Bishop, everybody knows about from his time at Harlequins next season. He might be one to step up next season. And that's the thing with Leeds. That's what they... Realistically, you look at their championship-winning teams, and without their homegrown players, they would not have won them competitions. And it's like we were talking earlier about players in key positions. They've had Maguire, Burrow, Diskin, Sinfield, all playing in key positions, and they're all homegrown players, and they're all pretty much international players. And that's because Leeds are one of the few teams that have been able to bring through their own players and successfully implement them into their key positions, and I'm sure that for every Maguire and Burrow, there's another couple coming through in their academy.
Now, I'm glad that you mentioned Maguire, because I honestly think that Leeds' hopes lie firmly on that lad's shoulders, and sadly he's going to be out till sometime in May, we believe.
Yeah, that'd be a blow for them, and this might perhaps be the time where we find out whether there's a good young six playing in the Rhinos academy, and whether he'll get a chance, whether they'll play Sinfield at six, you never know, but the opportunity will be there for someone. They might even play Ben Jones-Bishop at the back and play Webb at six. You don't know, but
they've got the likes of Paul McShane coming through as well, who can operate both at hooker and in the halfbacks, haven't they?
Yeah, well that's it, and McShane will get a few more opportunities now that Diskin's left anyway, so you never know, but I'm sure they'll be looking at, I mean, Brian McDermott, when he was at Harlequin, certainly brought through youngsters while he was there, so I'm sure he'll be looking at doing that now at Leeds with a higher standard of youngster.
Come and talk Rugby League in our forums, loverugbyleague.com. Now I want to look at Salford. Now this is perhaps the team which has, it's been like a revolving door, basically, the Willows, hasn't it, over the close season? There's been that many new players coming in, and they've shipped a whole load out. Shall I just read through the list of outgoings, first of all? Willie Tillow, he's retired. Phil Lulai has gone to Lezignan in France. Luke Swain has followed him to Carcassonne. Malcolm Olker has retired. Carl Fitzpatrick was released. Stuart Littler has ended up going to Lee. Jeremy Smith has gone to Wakefield. Ian Sibbett has gone to Bradford. Steve Tyra has wound up at Widnes, while Ben Wood has gone to Oldham, and Lewis Palfrey has gone to Whitehaven. That's one heck of a release list, isn't it?
Yeah, Salford have maybe looked at their team and they've not been doing as well as they'd hoped, and thought, right, well now's the time to revitalise the team, especially as it's the last year of the licensing as well.
Really, they need to push for something equivalent of a top eight spot, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, Salford are, it's a strange one with Salford, because this stadium sort of over, it's sort of starting and then it's not starting and now it's starting again. and that's always in the background. They've come out and said the Willows will be there, it'll be their last year at the Willows, so obviously they want to go out with a bit of a bang. And they've looked at their team, they've not perhaps done as well as they'd hoped last season, so they've took a gamble, they've released a sizeable number, but that's because they've brought in a sizeable number too. It's certainly a very big change to their team, and it'll be interesting to see how they line up.
I'm just looking back on the 2010 season, and they lost the first five games, albeit they were very competitive in the opening 5 weeks of the season. I'm thinking they lost a particular game at home to Bradford 7-0 at one point, which was an interesting result. Then they managed to pick up a couple of results heading towards the Easter period, had wins back-to-back against St Helens and Catalan in May, then they didn't win again until July. They need to start coming up with something a bit more consistent, don't they?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, we were talking about Wakefield earlier. The thing with Salford was when promotion relegation was about, they seemed to beat the teams in and around them, you know, just do enough to stay up. Whereas now in the age of licensing, it's pointless doing that. There's no point to your season if you're just happy to rumble around in 11th or 12th place. And that's why they've gone out on a bit of a whim here and signed a clutch of players, because Salford know that they need to be challenging up there in the top eight, and the thing is, it's not getting any easier. We sort of established the big four, didn't we? And then we looked at Hull and Huddersfield, who we then saw as the next three. So all of a sudden, you've got seven out of your eight that's gone, and Salford need to ensure that they're keeping up with the likes of Bradford and Castleford and Catalan. You know, the other clubs that are competing for that bottom space, Crusaders as well. And that's why they felt the need to do all this.
Certainly some of the players that have come in, they are of a higher standard though, aren't they? I'm thinking Matty Smith has made his loan move a permanent one from St Helens. Luke Patton, there's big things expected of him, the Australian fullback coming in from the Bulldogs. They brought in Chris Nero from Bradford, who I actually rate. I think he's done a really good job in the Super League over a number of years, as quite an enviable tries to game ratio. They brought Vinnie Anderson in from Warrington to add a bit of experience to the back row. Stephen Wilde doing likewise from Huddersfield. Paliasina comes in from Wigan alongside Bailey, his old teammate. Sean Gleeson comes in from Wakefield. Adam Neal will boost the pack from Warrington. And then just before Christmas, they signed Wayne Godwin.
Yeah, you look at that list and they're all players with sizeable Super League experience. And that's why I think a lot of heads have been turned by Salford's recruitment. Yeah, a lot of them players are late 20s, early 30s, but if they can get Salford pointing in the right direction, then so be it. I mean, they've got Matty Smith, he's a good young English player at half-back with hopefully Stephen Ratchford coming through as well. But all of them players have done a job in Super League already, and Salford have no doubt decided, well, look, we want proven players. We don't want to take a stab at the dark at unknown overseas players, or we don't want to take a gamble on maybe an unproven Championships player. We want to sign proven Super League quality, and that's what they've done.
Short-term fix, really, isn't it?
Well, yeah, you could say that. They've got to point themselves in the right direction, and maybe they've decided that this is the way to do it. How efficient that is, or how good value for money it is, I don't know, but maybe. Or maybe are they worried about retaining their licence? Do they feel that they need to prove a bit of a point on the pitch? I don't know. I certainly think it'd be very hard for the RFL to kick out a team that's doing well on the pitch. Hmm. And I think we've seen that when the licences were handed out last time, because I think Wakefield would have perhaps been a bit more under pressure had they not been doing so well on the pitch. They got to the Challenge Cup semi-final in 2008 and they were up in the playoffs, and I think that's a big thing, because at the end of the day, while all this licensing dominates discussion frustratingly all the time, the primary thing that people pay to see and the primary thing that gets covered is what happens on the pitch, and if your team is doing well on the pitch, it's very hard to ignore that.
I think also as well, maybe I've been a little bit harsh on Salford as well, because they have got some quality young players coming through. I'm thinking the likes of Stephen Ratchford. They've got a young hooker called Gareth Owen, who is also quite dynamic. He's not the biggest of lads, but he's quite dynamic around the play, the ball area. They've also got players that you'll know pretty well. Adam Sidlow, I'm thinking, from originally from Widnes, didn't he? Luke Adamson as well, who's perhaps the longest serving player now, and he's only 22.
Yeah, I think Salford would probably be a little bit disappointed that they've lost. They lost Rich Myler, obviously, but they got a lot of money for him, so they're probably not too fussed about that. But the likes of Jordan Turner, you know, he's another one that they've sort of nurtured through, and he ended up at Hull, didn't he? But I'm sure, I think that's one of the challenges for certainly the bottom half teams in Super League, is bringing through their own players and establishing them in the first team. And I think you've seen that with Castleford, have brought through their own players, and obviously a couple have moved on to bigger and better things, but they've still got a bit of a conveyor belt going on and bring their own young players through. And that is the challenge that Salford need to face. It's all right signing all these proven Super League players from elsewhere, but you need to make sure that you're bringing through your own players as well.
Another team which also succeeds with its, shall we say, conveyor belt of talent coming through over recent years has been St Helens. And it's something of a changing of the guard, really, because Knowsley Road's gone. It's Hello Halton Stadium for next season. The grand old man of the St Helens Park, Kieran Cunningham, has passed into folklore. He's retired. Matty Smith, as we mentioned, has gone to Salford. Mary Fassavalu has gone back to rugby union with Harley Quinns. Bryn Hargreaves have left for Bradford. Nick Fossard and Jacob Emmett have both winded up at Castleford. Paul Johnson, who was a young front rower who was hoping to make his way, has ended up at Wakefield. A young lad called Yates has gone to Hunslet. Chris Dean has gone to Wakefield. Matt Gidley has been released. Jack Bradbury has gone to Oldham. Jamie Ellis has gone to Lee, with Gareth Frodsham heading off to Widnes on loan. That's quite a sizeable chunk of players, really, that are leaving St Helens, isn't it?
Yeah, there's a few youngsters in there chipped in as well, but there's still a fairly sizable proportion of first team players. But as you've seen in the past couple of years, St Helens have been bringing through a variety of players to gain experience, and you look at the signings they've made in Shenton and McCarthy Scarswick in particular, who are both really good young English players, and they'll certainly fill any gaps that were left by the departures of say Gidley and Fossard. And that's the thing, they don't want to, it looks like St Helens are leaving open opportunities for their young players to claim a place in their team, and you look at, obviously Cunningham's retired now, but players like Wellens and Long and Sculthorpe all came through and established themselves in the St Helens first team, and they created sort of like almost like a dynasty, didn't they, over the years, and I'm sure St Helens will be looking at the next batch of players in that mould that will do that. You've got them at various stages in James Graham and James Roby, and maybe going a little bit further on, you've got Kyle Eastmond, and I'm sure they'll be looking at the likes of Jamie Foster, for instance, to, you know, kick on, and that's what Roy Simmons will be looking to do in his first season. You'd hope that he would anyway. You'd hope that he's not going to turn back to Australia straight away and recruit players. Yeah, they've brought in Josh Perry, but you'd hope that he'll be looking at giving young players a chance.
I think the other thing as well is that you've already touched upon the young players, but I'm really looking forward to seeing the development of some of those players over the course of the season. I'm thinking Matty Ashes played 24 or so games last season. Paul Clough, a similar sort of number. Andrew Dixon, we must remember him, he's only 20 years of age. He came in debut year, really, made 19 appearances, and you've already touched upon Jamie Foster coming through. So there is that conveyor belt of talent, isn't there? And also, it's another year on for players like Soliola, who was sadly missing for much of the campaign last year with injury. They're still going to be there or thereabouts, aren't they, really, St Helens? Yeah, or you'd expect them to be.
Yeah, certainly, yeah, I'm expecting them to be up there with Wigan and Warrington. And I don't think, even the loss of Cunningham and whatever, I don't think that's going to stop them being up there. And Mick Potter has given the young players a good grounding last season, and they'll only be better for the fact that they've played 15, 20, 25 games last season. And that means that now going into the new campaign, Simmons can trust them to do a job because they've done it. They've been there and done it. And now this second season for them, or the third season, perhaps there'll be a time where they've got to mature from being young players with promise who were making it out to be an established first team players.
So St Helens, they finished second last term. Do you expect them to be round about similar sort of position next season?
I think they'd be top three. I think the top three will be the same.
For more of the latest on rugby league news, log in to loverugbyleague.com. Earlier, I spoke with Lee Centurion's boss Ian Millward, and he enthused about what his side learned against Salford before switching his attentions to the visit of Super League glamour club Warrington Wolves.
I thought the friendly gave us a lot of things. It gave us, just showed the players, you know, attitude and enthusiasm was great. it showed that everyone's improving in their game. Since I've taken over, that's positive. And the young guys, that was very enlightening. You know what I mean? So what we've got to do is there's things out of the game where the opposition will be stronger. Because obviously Warrington are a better team than Salford. And I just think, we're going to have to, keep improving. I'm really excited about the game because the Warrington team basically is full of, internationals and high-class players. And they're probably in the top two teams this year, either Super League or Challenge Cup. So that's going to be a really good barometer to where we're at fitness-wise, strength-wise, skill-wise, and working as a unit. Keep working on that at training. The game will come around very quickly. Interesting way to prepare for a game. We'll prepare here in cold conditions and maybe snow and sleet and rain where Warrington are off Tenerife. So, but that probably gives the fans an example why it'll be a massive game to come and watch because they're picking their best 1-17, and I didn't get any injuries out of the game, so I'll be picking my best 1-17.
For more of the latest on rugby league news, log in to loverugbyleague.com. Thanks to Ian Millward there, and we'll be hoping to get more of the game's personalities involved over the course of the season. Now, before we go, in time-honoured football results fashion, I'm going to run through all the friendly scores we have at the time of recording. If you've been at a friendly game, come and tell us on the forums at loverugbyleague.com, where on site you can now also take part in our brand new Fantasy League. And now, the results. 27th of December 2010. Lee Centurions 13, Salford City Reds 12. 1st of January 2011, Leeds Rhinos 40, Wakefield Trinity Wildcats 22. The 2nd of January, Widnes Vikings 18, Warrington Wolves 48. Batley Bulldogs 30, Dewsbury Rams 6, Oldham 34, Rochdale Hornets 28, Featherstone Rovers 38, Hunslet Hawks 16. 3rd of January, Whitehaven 12, Workington Town 20. 9th of January, Batley Bulldogs 30, Huddersfield Giants 18, Widnes Vikings 12, Crusaders 20, Bradford Bulls 50, Halifax 8, Castleford Tigers 62, York City Knights 10, Barrow Raiders 30, Swinton Lions 28, Featherstone Rovers 36, Gateshead Thunder 22, Keighley Cougars 24, Rochdale Hornets 20. And results from the 16th of January, Huddersfield Giants 18, Hull Kingston Rovers 10, Batley Bulldogs 11, Halifax 4, York City Knights 26, Castleford Tigers 40, Salford City Reds 24, Wigan Warriors 30, Hunslet Hawks 26, Leeds Rhinos 36, Barrow Raiders 40, Workington Town 0, Dewsbury Rams 10, Wakefield Trinity Wildcats 30, and Featherstone Rovers 36, Oldham 10. Sadly, that's about all we've got time for here on Talking Points from loverugbyleague.com. But please join myself and James Gordon next time when we'll be debating all the issues, all the points, and all the talking points in rugby league.